Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, whenever you're listening, and welcome to Tri-State at the Plate. I'm your host, Andy Burdick, and alongside me is Bob Finkbeiner.
Hello, Portland.
And we have the Roman Jason Ruggiero.
It's good to be here.
He is a production wizard at Bam. So we're going to be talking about baseball in the Tri-State area. If you're not familiar with the Tri-State area, for us, it is Pennsylvania, Ohio, and New York. And we're going to be looking at teams that are in these areas. So we have major league clubs, obviously. We have Pittsburgh and Cleveland. But we also have some minor league clubs where we have some other teams that are affiliated with other clubs. We have the Erie Seawolves, who are affiliated with the Detroit Tigers. And we have
the Jamestown Jammers.
Yeah, we have the Jammers with the Pirates. And you have a lot of Indians affiliates over in Ohio with we have
the Lake County Captains. Coming out of Akron, Lake County Captains.
Mahoning Valley
Scrappers.
And actually, I noticed quite a bit last year when we were traveling around watching quite a few teams that, you know, there's a lot of minor league action in this area. So if you keep your eye out, there's actually quite a few teams to watch in the area. So that's what we're going to be looking at. So we're going to be starting to post some regular podcasts. We don't know what regular is yet, and probably in these cold winter months they're going to be a little fewer and further between than they will be once the action actually gets started. But we'll definitely make sure we keep everyone up to date on when we have podcasts coming up, so you can listen to our beautiful voices. We're also going to be working on our prospect list, so you have players to watch in the upcoming weeks as spring training starts kicking into gear. You're going to see a lot of action going on, and you're going to want to know the names to keep an eye on throughout the first couple months of the season also. So we'll be working on, towards the end of the week, hopefully we'll have some different prospects for you to look at.
And you're going to have who for us, Andy?
I'm going to be covering the Pirates. I'm a long-suffering Pirates fan, so I'm going to be looking at probably about the top 20 or so prospects in the Pittsburgh Pirates organization. Just some guys to keep an eye on as the season's getting ready to get going.
I managed to wrestle the Indians away from Bob. We both have been long-suffering Tribe fans.
Oh, yes.
But I have taken those reins from him, and he has taken over the Tigers.
Yes, the unlimited pocketbook of Mike Ilitch, the Detroit Tigers, and their quest to buy a World Series.
The Little Caesars Pizza King. Yes, Mike Ilitch.
Pizza.
If you don't like the Tigers and you buy Little Caesars Pizza, you are supporting the Tigers' ever-expanding payroll.
Well, it's funny because the ever-expanding payroll doesn't necessarily trickle down to the farm system with Detroit, that's for sure.
No, it certainly doesn't.
No.
So we're going to give a quick rundown with each of the teams that we're going to be covering. We'll start with Jason with the Indians. So we're going to look at just a little bit of how 2012 finished up and how it kind of affects baseball in the Tri-State area. And then we're going to start looking towards the Tribe spring training heading into 2013.
Well, if you are an Indians fan, you know that 2012 ended very badly.
Some might say horribly, even.
Yeah.
August was definitely a bad month.
Yes. They went 68-94 to finish in fourth place in the Central. And they went 20-51. In the second half. So definitely the downhill slide. And that, of course, was made even worse by historically bad August, which led to Manny Acta being fired, replaced in the interim by his bench coach, Sandy Alomar Jr. At the end of the season, of course, Sandy was replaced by Terry Francona, who they lured out of his cushy ESPN job to come and manage the Indians. The Francona hire has led to, hopefully, a new philosophy from the Indians. They seem to have been showing that, but we'll see how that carries over into the season. I was looking today at the additions and subtractions. There are a laundry list of mediocre players that are no longer on the Indians roster. So if you are frustrated by the past Indians teams, by the likes of, you know, Shelley Duncan, Aaron Cunningham.
I really miss Aaron Cunningham and his average.
Roberto Hernandez, a.k.a. Fausto Carmona. Lars Anderson, Genmar Gomez. These folks are gone. And they are replaced by, hopefully, some actual major league talent. So we'll be looking to see how that goes. Their offseason, of course, they had the big Shinsu Chu trade, which brought them back Trevor Bauer, along with Drew Stubbs and some bullpen arms. They traded a bullpen arm, Esmiel Rogers for Mike Aviles, and some other guys like Yan Gomes who might factor in. And then some free agent signings with Mark Reynolds, Nick Swisher, and Brett Myers. So that's kind of where the Indians stand now. A cleaned house, replaced with what I really do believe are much better quality players. Some are on the fringe aspect. A guy like Mark Reynolds, we'll see if he can produce the home runs that make up for the 200-plus K machine that he becomes. But the Indians have lacked power. That's true. Now they've got Swisher. They've got Reynolds.
And they're healthy right now, too. They're not hurt.
And right now they're healthy, right. And that's the other thing. They've gotten rid of some of those guys who were perpetual disappointments, like Travis Hafner, the ever-injured Travis Hafner, who now will saddle the Yankees, hopefully, with his 10 games of 900 OPS and then hurt for 4 months. And Grady Sizemore is no longer an Indian. As of this moment.
You never know.
I wouldn't be surprised if he works his way back somehow, but...
My favorite perpetual Indians disappointment year after year, though, is Matt LaPorta. Because yes. You hear every season, is the year, Matt LaPorta.
And I believe...
Was it the ankle? Was it the hip?
I believe that Matt LaPorta was outrighted, cleared waivers, and is now, at this point, destined for Columbus.
Well, he did get the invite, the non-roster invite this morning.
Oh, I'm sure he got the invite because we have to keep the hope. Spring training is the season of perpetual hope, right?
That's right.
So we have to keep the hope alive that Matt LaPorta might turn into something and that Michael Brantley is not the only thing we got for CC Sabathia.
Wow.
Matt LaPorta, AAA All-Star.
If you want to talk about Indians' disappointments, there's, of course, Ubaldo Jimenez, who still remains on this roster.
That was a good transition, by the way. Speaking of Indians' disappointments.
Although, despite the problems he had, his home splits were not that bad.
That's true.
His away
his
splits
road splits were
awful.
Quite horrendous.
Yes.
Hey, you know, there's a possibility we could have more starters than we need. Maybe we should go a 6-man rotation where Ubaldo only starts at home.
I like that idea.
Thinking outside the box, you'd fit in Colorado. They'd love you there.
Yeah, there you go. Speaking of the Ubaldo Jimenez trade, we work right to Colorado there. But there's a huge roster turnover from the Indians. And so when we're heading into spring training, talking about the starting rotation, I think the biggest question is, can Trevor Bauer make the starting rotation? He's obviously, the Nick Swisher signing is a big signing, the biggest contract, free agent contract in Indians history. The Mark Reynolds signing, hopefully that works out. But I think the Chu trade, which brought back Bauer, that addressed their biggest weakness, which is their rotation. So this is how I look at it. You have Masterson, Jimenez, and Myers. They're going to make the rotation if they make it through spring healthy. That's not necessarily guaranteed, especially with Jimenez. He may come up with some kind of injury to mask disappointment and ineffectiveness. But if they're healthy, don't you agree, Bob, that they will they will be there?
Definitely, especially because of the veteran experience of the top three, not to mention the payroll part of it, at least for the first month or two.
Right. You have to give Jimenez a chance because he's, I think, making $8.5 million is what I think off the top of my head.
So.
Then you have Zach McAllister, who I think is a virtual lock for the fourth spot. I think he could pitch himself out of that spot.
Or he could pitch himself up to number two spot.
He could. At times, he was the best starter the Indians had last year.
Just wore down at the end.
He wore down at the end. That's right. So if we're looking at the fifth spot, I see four candidates. David Huff, Scott Kazmir, who they signed on a minor league contract, Carlos Carrasco, who's coming back from Tommy John, and will be on an innings limit, and Trevor Bauer. Now, out of that group, I see Huff being in the bullpen.
I agree with that.
He's out of options, and he's left-handed, and he's struggled in his starting attempts. And they don't have any lefties in the bullpen right now. I see Kazmir going to Columbus to try to regain what Scott Kazmir once was, which was a former strikeout king. I mean, there's potential there.
Oh, yeah, great numbers as a youngster.
Right, but he has been injured and ineffective the last two seasons at least.
Yes.
Carrasco is my guess right now. Obviously, we haven't seen anyone pitch. But he would be my guess to be the fifth starter coming out of camp, and that Bauer would go to Columbus, and he would replace Carrasco when he hit his limit, or Jimenez when they've seen that he just cannot recover the form that he had for that half a season in Colorado.
Now, one arm you did not mention here, what about Corey Kluber?
That's right. There is Corey Kluber, and I think if Carrasco shows that he's not ready to come back from Tommy John, I think Bauer has a better chance. And don't take this as saying Bauer has no chance. I think Bauer can certainly pitch himself into the fifth starter spot. If he comes out guns a-blazing in spring training, I don't think they will just make it a hard and fast rule Trevor Bauer is going to start in AAA. I don't think they're going into camp with that thought. But if Carrasco's out, then Kluber does become a stronger option. Personally, I think Carrasco has the upper hand because he was so effective for that last 2 months before he was injured. But I think right now it's Carrasco, and then Bauer, and then Kluber.
Where might the service clock argument come into play with a guy like Trevor Bauer, where if you wait and delay his major league roster spot, you might control him for another year?
Well, and I think that's the other... That's going to be one of the factors. And again, that's what I mean. I think Bauer can pitch so well in spring training that they say, forget the service clock. We have to bring this guy along. And that, of course, it could go off the other members of the rotation. If the other guys are struggling and Bauer looks to be the best of the lot, how do you send him back to AAA? And, of course, a lot of Indians fans would say, well, that's what the Indians do. They don't make the right decision and they play the cost control game. But I think that Francona will force their hand. And he has the pull with this front office we've already seen, mm-hmm. where he's changed the way they've operated. And I think if he sees Bauer as the guy that needs to be there because he's ready and there's no reason to wait, I think that he'll be able to convince them to do that. But that's another... His service is another reason to consider a Kluber or a Carrasco.
Right.
Basically, that's the main thing right now I want to talk about. Looking out towards this spring training as far as things to watch for, the Indians have incredible depth at the low levels. They have an extremely thin system at the top, and it's very deep at the bottom, which is why you'll see in organizational rankings they rank pretty low. Because there's no one ready now. It's been cleaned out by the likes of Kipnis and Chisenhall and Pomeranz and White being shipped off to Colorado. So Bauer is the stud that's ready to come now, if we even consider him a minor leaguer, which is questionable at this point. But at the low level, especially in the middle infield, they're really deep with Francisco Lindor, Dorsis Paulino, Ronnie Rodriguez, and Tony Wolters. And so it could be kind of a fun group to follow this year. And it's going to be a big year for a lot of guys in the low levels, because that's where people wash out. They have one good year that they can never repeat. And it's going to be a big year to see who survives. And it's going to be a big year to see if guys like Tony Wolters can keep moving through the levels and not get passed by guys like Lindor, because there's a lot of depth in the middle. And if you don't perform, I think it's really easy to see some guys who were once considered not top prospects, but solid prospects to be passed. And we'll see what happens. Wolters looks to be heading to Akron along with his double play partner, Rodriguez.
Yes, that's right.
And so we'll be watching those guys, because they're going to be coming to Erie, because Akron is in the Eastern League with the Seawolves. So we'll be watching those guys when they come to Erie, and we'll let you know how they look when we see them.
I tell you what, my favorite thing that I'm looking forward to with this Indians lineup has got to be Drew Stubbs and Mark Reynolds hitting in the same lineup. There are Justin Verlander, when he saw that, is just he is just chomping at the bit to get the Indians lineup.
There's going to be some K's.
They definitely make Doug Fister a strikeout artist.
The only thing I'll say, and I'm not disputing that they won't be K artists, but the last 2 years, Chu, who Stubbs is essentially replacing, was becoming quite a K artist, especially against lefties.
Oh, atrocious.
Stubbs is certainly worse, but it's not night and day. So we'll see what happens there. I have some dates in case you're interested. Pitchers and catchers for the Indians reporting February 12th. The full squad February 15th, and they got their first Cactus League game against the Reds on February 22nd, and that could be the first time we get to see Shin-Soo Chu play center field. Just going to throw that out there.
All right. Well, let's kind of spin that into what we have going on with Detroit. And like we said, Detroit's one of their minor league affiliates is the AA Erie Seawolves, which is really close to our hometown. So everybody kind of gets a fair shake at seeing everybody that comes through Detroit. And as Jason said, you get a lot of good players that come through last year. You know, last year we had Garrett Cole, who was pitching in Erie for a little bit. We had Jacob Turner, who was in Erie for a little bit before he ended up getting shipped off to Miami. So, you know, you get to see quite a bit of talent coming through AA Erie.
Gary Brown of the Richmond Flying Squirrels, a Giants top outfield prospect, was in Erie. Looked very, very good. As well as Anthony Rendon of the Nationals. He's currently blocked right now in the organization by Ryan Zimmerman. He was a perennial all-star. Detroit Tigers last year finished 88-74 on their way to winning the American League pennant. And then to the World Series, where they got promptly swept by the San Francisco Giants and their ultimate pitching staff. Remarkably, the 88 wins was the fewest wins of all the teams making the postseason. In the offseason, they have not just lost players, they have regained, restocked, adding Torii Hunter, most likely play right field. They have re-signed Anibal Sanchez, just came in terms of arbitration with Max Scherzer. And they also have a former Indian, Victor Martinez, coming back from two knee surgeries.
Probably the biggest addition to their team is that Vic, as of now, is healthy.
Yeah. Right, absolutely. So this lineup is obviously very fearsome. We don't even mention the Triple Crown winner in Miguel Cabrera, and also the big hoss playing first base, Prince Fielder. So combined with that offense and their pitching staff, they can make up for a marginal defense, but they are anchored center field by Austin Jackson, who can cover a lot of spacious ground there in Comerica Park. And they look poised and ready to go, to repeat the division and possibly the American League. The question mark they have is a punch rookie closer in Rodon, which will be determined to see how effective he is in spring training. But don't be surprised if they add another arm before it's all said and done. That bullpen.
And with Rodon, that's one of the neater things of having the Erie Seawolves there and seeing a lot of these guys go through is, you know, Detroit does a pretty good job with their farm system as far as advancing players, you know, from AA up to the big club. You know, where last season we got to see Bruce Rondon and we got to see Nick Castellanos and, you know, we got to see Avisail Garcia. You know, they all made stops and, you know, Don Kelly. You know, Detroit feeds their guys through the system and they get them up to that big club quickly.
Very quickly, right.
If you want to see them in Erie, you got to get there fast.
Yes, I believe Verlander maybe had one or two starts in Erie and that was it.
Yeah.
Andy Oliver was there briefly before going to Toledo. Turner was there maybe for a marginal, maybe 8-10 starts on his way up.
But Detroit, you know, they have a lot of talent. They push it through the system, and you know, you get a great opportunity to see a lot of that talent up close and personal in Erie. Which, you know, that's one of the benefits again of baseball in this tri-state area is that, you know, we're kind of privy to seeing a lot of these players who are in Erie.
Now, both Castellanos and Garcia will be in spring training camp this year. Garcia obviously made the late season call up last year. In the postseason run, it performed fairly well for a youngster.
When I saw him come up to bat,
similar to Cabrera,
he looked just like Miguel Cabrera. I mean, the first time I saw him come up to bat, I was like, "That's Miguel Cabrera up to bat. Who is this guy that looks? Right. He's shaped exactly like Miguel Cabrera. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing to be shaped just like Miguel Cabrera.
Depends if you can hit like Miguel Cabrera.
But boy, he sure looks like him. He's a dead-on ringer.
He will be competing most likely in left field against another former Seawolf, Andy Dierks, who remains healthy. Last year put up some really, really solid numbers. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I tend to predict that he will begin the season in Toledo, unless he has a remarkably strong spring training.
Yeah, Jim Leland in their fan fest, he seemed a little bit down on Andy Dierks. I know he didn't put up great splits last season, but you know, it was a super small sample size. And you know, he put up great numbers in the other half of his splits too. I mean, I feel like that's a guy you probably want to give a fair shake to and just kind of see what he's got at least. You know, his numbers were so strong, you know, half the time against those righties. So yeah, that'll be interesting to see how they figure out to work the Garcia Dierks platoon situation.
Yeah, worries me about Garcia is I don't think his plate discipline has really come around quite yet to handle the everyday job, but a possible platoon split would be not surprising to begin the season.
Well, it sounded like too they wanted to make sure that they got Garcia every day at bats. So if he wasn't going to get every day at bats, it kind of sounded like they were almost going to ship him back down just so he could play every day. But I guess we'll have to wait and see. That's zany Jim Leland.
Yes. Now, Nick Castellanos, the former first round pick, ranked number, was it, you said 10, I believe, on the MLB?
Yeah, he was number 10 on MLB's top 100 prospect list.
Which is interesting. We got the chance to see him last year near in person. I love the fact that he's tall and lanky. He's being converted to the outfield, a corner outfield spot. He's got a very strong arm. And love the fact that he's one of the old-fashioned guys who does not wear batting gloves when he bats.
Oh, yeah.
He's 6'4", 210, Bob.
That's a nice frame. I wish I had that kind of frame.
He's a tall drink of water, that yeah. one.
I think in Moneyball, they'd refer to that as a frame you can dream on.
Nice Moneyball reference.
And he performed very well last year in the Gulf Coast League, Florida State League, where he hit .405. However, the transition to Double A Erie, he ended up hitting .264 in 79 games. I believe he had a kind of a decline there. He got a slump at the end of the season because he was around .300 for most of that time in the area before he fell to that .264 average. His power, I think, is developing. I'm not sure how much room there is to grow. But obviously, the kid's very, very talented.
I believe his cumulative numbers for the year, talking about his average, were he hit .320 with 10 home runs and 57 RBIs. So he definitely had the average there over the whole span.
Right.
Even despite the slump there. I mean, at 6'4", you'd think he's got some room he can fill out. He's definitely got the frame to carry a power hitter's body. I guess one question, though, would be, when you transition a frame like that from third to the outfield, obviously you need some more mobility. And the Tigers, though, they never let that stop them before from putting power hitters in the outfield. Defense has never been a prerequisite in Detroit to play a corner outfield spot. So if he can hit, I mean, I don't think that's going to stop him.
No.
The thing I really liked about Castellanos, though, was that in his last month of the season, he walked more than he did the first 2 months of the season combined. You know, he really started to show that he's developing a little bit of plate discipline. Plus, it's just, he's a badass. He doesn't wear batting gloves. I love that.
That is. I
love it. That's my favorite thing about Castellanos.
Yes.
He will not turn 21 until March 3rd. So he's 21, coming off, 79 games in Double A.
Yes.
Got to feel okay about that.
Yeah. So
got to feel okay.
He's doing all right.
He's
doing all right. And an invite to spring training.
Yeah. Right. It wouldn't be surprising if he begins the season again in Erie, but if he's performing well right away, a quick promotion to Toledo, you know, would not be uncharacteristic of the Tigers.
And a quick promotion from Toledo to the big club would not be uncharacteristic either.
Not shocking. Well, let's get to my labor of love, the Pittsburgh Pirates. With a heavy heart as I watched the most epic collapse of my life last season. My buddy asked me last year, he said, what would it take? This is at the All-Star break. He says, what would it take for the Pirates not to finish .500 this season? And I stared him right in the eyes and I said, I don't know. It would have to be the worst finish I've ever seen in my life. And it was the worst finish I have ever seen in my life.
Unless that you're a Boston Red Sox fan.
Yeah. Maybe that was a pretty epic game collapse. Lead, yeah. But yeah, I'm selfish and thinking of the Pirates only, so I don't really care about those Red Sox fans. They think everything's the worst thing that happens in their lives. But the Pirates coming off 2012, we saw a couple of our prospects already coming up that we pushed through the system in Starling Marte. I think he definitely showed that he has major league talent. I think you know, plate discipline is going to be a big thing for him because he likes to swing it at everything. He reminds me of a poor man's Vladimir Guerrero right now, where he just good. He loves swinging at anything. He doesn't care. He's up there to hit. He's not up there to walk. So kind of watching Starling Marte evolve and develop.
A great arm in the outfield, though. Strong arm.
Great. He's an awesome defender. He's a fantastic defender. And then the other big thing, the finish to last year, Garrett Cole got bumped up to AAA for one start. And I think they started working on a two-seam with him last year. His four-seam's a little flat. You know, even though you can pump it up to 102, anybody can hit anything that's going straight in the majors. So they're trying to give him a two-seamer with a little bit of life. So see if he can control that. You know, they had him working on that towards the end of the season, which was nice to see. Coming into this season, going into spring training, we had some great finishes from some players last year who hopefully will continue to develop. We had three fantastic international signings. We had Gregory Polanco, Alan Hansen, and Luis Heredia, who were all international signings for us. Polanco and Hansen were both 2009 international signings, and Heredia was a 2010 international signing. Polanco, he plays out. He's in the outfield right now. We have him, I think, center field is where we had him. And he ended up hitting 325 for West Virginia in low A with 485 plate appearances. He walked 44 times, struck out 64 times. You know, put up amazing, just solid numbers, you know, for a 20-year-old. Actually, I think he was 19 throughout most of last season. And then Alan Hansen, who was our other international signing, you know, had a great season as well. In 558 plate appearances, he hit 309. He struck out a little bit more than Polanco. He had 105 Ks, but, you know, he still walked 55 times, so it's not like he's just up there hacking away. And then Luis Heredia, who he has the little King Felix abilities, 6'6", 205 pounds. He's 17 years old. He was in low A last season in short season with State College, pitched 66 and a third. He's not a big strikeout machine even with his frame, and I guess that's kind of the industry consensus with him is that, you know, he's throwing about as hard as he's going to be throwing, so right now it's kind of developing, you know, your curveball and right. Working on control with him. But three international signings like that, you know, Pittsburgh invested heavily in these guys. You know, a lot of these guys were, we spent more money on these players than we did on a lot of other guys, and, you know, they set a lot of records for us as far as money we spent. So to kind of see them develop like that towards the end of last season was good to see.
And this is prior to the change in the bargaining agreement too, I believe, right?
Oh,
the national signs.
Pittsburgh is responsible for a lot of changes in collective bargaining over the last couple of years. And that Josh Bell is the next player I was just about to talk about. Who, Josh Bell? We spent $5 million for a second round pick. I think he was 61st overall, maybe. $5 million, and Major League Baseball said we've had enough of that. So I think Josh Bell actually, he sent out letters of intent to all teams to say, don't draft me because I'm not playing baseball. And then Pittsburgh showed up, with a bag of money like the Monopoly man at his door. Just, are you sure you're not going to play baseball? And he said, no, I'm not sure.
There's 5 million reasons why you should play baseball.
But of course, he blew out his knee last season. I think he tore his meniscus. And so he missed. Last year was a wash for him. So he'll probably be back in West Virginia. But he's a teenager. So it's not like he's a lost cause. We'll stick him back in West Virginia and run at it again. But the other big thing that I'm keeping an eye on, because I'm kind of a grit guy myself, and you guys know this from coaching, I love watching catchers. And Pittsburgh has a crop of catchers right now that are supposed to be the future of the franchise. And I've been saying this since J.R. House, that the next great catcher is coming through our system. But I really, one of these guys has got to be it.
Neil Walker used to catch too, I believe.
He was, yeah, yeah. He was a former catcher, Neil Walker.
Then third base, then second base?
And then second base. We found him a home.
That's good.
We found him a home.
Well, when he hits like that, you're going to find him a home somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. You got to play somewhere. We don't care. We'll take the painful defense, which is actually developed into... He's actually developed into quite an adequate defender, I would say. Mm-hmm. But going into spring training, I'm keeping an eye on... we have Tony Sanchez, who's the he was a first round pick that didn't make a lot of people happy. We kind of signed him. I want to say fourth overall maybe that year. He was an early on pick, and we signed him as underslot. So we signed him much earlier than teams expected us to take him. And he's 25 years old, or he will be 25 this season, going into May. So, you know, we're kind of hitting that point where we need to start seeing what's going on. But, you know, we have Russell Martin right now as the stopgap in there. But I'm keeping an eye on Tony Sanchez and his progress. We're hoping to get a little more pop out of him this season. We have a 19-year-old phenom, Wyatt Matheson, who I'll be keeping a close eye on this spring. And then we have Jin Di Zhang, who's another one of our international signings. He's 19 years old also, and he is built like a, you'll have to pardon my French, but a brick shithouse, this man. He is thick. He's thick. And a lot of people are wondering whether he's going to stick around a catcher. Well, he put in some work, lost some weight, and he's looking a little more agile behind the plate, so I'll be keeping an eye on him as well.
I have to bring up something for entertainment of this podcast, is that anyone that knows you knows that it has been a love-hate, mostly hate relationship you've had with Pedro Alvarez.
Oh, Pedro Alvarez.
And if I think back to last April or May, may have been, discussing Alvarez and his prospects for the 2012 season, I believe you said that if he hits 30 home runs or more, you would personally write a letter to apologize for calling him Fat Ass Alvarez.
Yeah, Fatty McFat.
Or Fatty McFat. There you go.
Typically, when he comes up to bat, I say Fatty McFat coming to the plate.
I just want to know maybe if you want to make that apology.
You know what? I'm not going to formally apologize to Alvarez because...
An apology letter, that's something we could put on the website.
Maybe. Maybe I'll draft something. I don't know. There's no formal apology because there were too many ups and downs in that season.
He even played good defense last year for you guys.
You know, he did play... I want to say he was like the third or fourth best third baseman in baseball according to baseball references.
Defense and
great
offense.
Defense.
I believe, though, you're missing the qualifier that I wasn't present for when the wager was made.
I don't think it was exactly.
I believe it was just if you correct me if I'm wrong, Bob, but if he hits more than 30 home runs, I will write the apology letter. The ebb and flow of Pedro Alvarez's season really isn't.
See, here's the thing. I think
it's cumulative.
I'm much more arbitrary than saying 30 home runs. I would say something that is much too wishy-washy that you couldn't quantify. I think what I said was if Pedro Alvarez has a good season.
No, I do believe he's had 30 home runs.
I don't. That doesn't sound like something I'd say.
I wasn't there. I can't.
I might draft him an apology letter, but he still needs to get in shape. Stop eating so much.
I'll rescue you by attacking you from a different direction. In my research today, I noticed that MLB.com, I believe, posted their preseason power rankings with Tigers number one, much to the chagrin of the Indians. And
as a new Tigers fan, that pleases me very much.
Yeah, right. That's right. And the Indians coming in at 23, and the Pirates coming in at 25. In case you're wondering, it was the Chicago Cubs that separated you from the Indians. And but more to the point, the line, it was a one sentence, I believe, that the MLB.com author, I'm not sure who it was, wrote to justify his Pirates ranking. They were on the way to another sub-500 season, and then they traded Joel Hanrahan.
Oh,
that was my reaction. Actually, was ouch. That's harsh. I mean, for a team that, you know, yes, they had a historically bad collapse at the end, but to just gloss over the progress that a team that has suffered
20 years, in case you're counting.
20. I knew you'd know.
In case you're counting.
I thought that was it, but I didn't want to. Pile on and add too many.
That's two-thirds of my natural life, by the way.
Yeah. But, you know, for someone, a franchise that's had 20 straight losing seasons, to come so close, and then that's the write-up is...
You know, 20 years, that's all the respect you garner, I guess.
I guess.
Yeah. I accept that. It is what it is. You know, like I said earlier on, before we started rolling, I was talking about how our theme song, whenever we talk about the Pirates, has got to be George Michael's Faith, because that's pretty much all you get from the Pirates. You're like, yes, these next group of prospects are going to be it. This is when we break the streak, and then 5 years later, J.R. House isn't playing baseball, and all of your dreams are crushed with Kevin Young's pop-up to first.
I've got one name for you. Adam Miller.
I believe Adam Miller was the Indians organizational number one prospect for four straight years.
Exactly. That's exactly what I was going
to
say.
How many innings he pitched in the major leagues? Yet to pitch in the major leagues.
We got a goose egg.
It'd
in
be
that
a goose egg.
Yes.
Yeah.
Got a big old goose egg.
Last I know, he was with Yankees last year, but I'm not sure if they've continued that relationship through the offseason.
Yes. I do admire the effort and dedication he's trying to put in to reach that goal, despite the odd finger injury he's had to overcome, what, twice?
Yes. Yes. Extensive finger ligament surgery, having to change the grip of his signature pitch. Because of that surgery, it's been a long road for Adam Miller, and I don't know if he's reached the end of the road or if there's still miles to go, but I unfortunately think the destination's become pretty clear.
You know, speaking of that long road, going back to Scott Kazmir and his minor league invite to spring training, the article in New York Post, I believe it was last week, talks about his journey as a top prospect, traded away, he finds the perennial all-star success, his another injury. He's throwing the ball 82 miles per hour. He's out of baseball. And now we have him back in the, was it the Venezuelan or some other Latin American?
Yeah, something like that.
Winter League
yeah.
ball. He's throwing the ball, by all counts, 94, 95. So it's a very interesting point to make that his velocity is back. Now, is the control back?
Right.
Can you miss bats now?
Right. And the control's always been an issue for Kazmir. When he first came up, that's my favorite. Lou Pinnell's story actually involves Scott Kazmir when he was managing the Rays, and he had grown frustrated of Kazmir. You know, it's like a scene from Major League Ball 8, Ball 12, and so apparently I read this online that Sweet Lou walked out to the mound, took the ball, and said, "Scott, you can find the plate here, or you can find it in Durham. The choice is yours," and put the ball back in Kazmir's glove. So, I mean, the point being, the control is always, that's, you know, when you can throw that fast and you do have movement, harnessing it, that's the name of the game. So, I don't know. We'll see. Nobody started throwing yet, but we'll know soon, I guess.
Basically, if you like baseball in the tri-state area, Pittsburgh or Cleveland, you are just wishing. You're wishing constantly. You're wishing for something, the next great thing.
Hope.
That's it. Hope springs eternal.
And to that point, to wrap it up on a positive note, I guess, there is a certain satisfaction, Bob can back me up on this, when after years of failed prospects, years of Matt LaPorta's and, well, we'll just leave it there, but when a Jason Kipnis comes up and actually hits the ball and plays defense.
We are all Kipnises.
And it's just, there is something, you know, it's like, oh, this is what it's supposed to be like. This is what happens on other teams. We have highly touted prospects, and they come up and fill spots.
Or you can trade for a Carlos Santana, and he pans out.
Yeah, right. Right. We don't want to get the Santana haters started out there. Some people would argue that he hasn't worked out, but I would say the best is yet to come for Carlos.
I would agree with that.
Well, I think that's a great place to wrap up there. So, if you were listening today, you liked what you heard, you can send us an email if you have any questions about anything that we talked about today, or if you have any questions in general about baseball in the tri-state area. Our email address is tristatebb@tsmbaseball.com. You can check us out on the Twitter, @tristatebb. You can also follow us on Facebook. We're at facebook.com/tsmbaseball. Hopefully the next time we get together, we'll have a couple questions that we can answer. If not, I'm sure we'll just make up some more stuff off the top of our heads. I think, the more that you continue to listen as the season starts getting underway, the more the unique original content that we'll have to present to you. You know, as I mentioned earlier, we're in a really unique position in the area that we live in to see a lot of baseball and a lot of baseball that people don't necessarily have a lot of access to. Keep your ears open. Send us in your emails. Follow us on the Twitter. And like us on Facebook.
And keep checking that website, because there's going to be some content going up there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Within a few days.
We'll be, top 20 countdowns.
We'll be posting some things on our website at tsmbaseball.com. So make sure that you are checking us out on the interwebs as well. Over the next couple days, we'll be having our prospects on there. So. Sounds like a great place to stop. You guys are ready.
Wrap it up.
All right.
Audio.
Well, we don't have a great wrap-up closing yet, so once we come up with something witty, we'll make sure we insert it here.